This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the jurisdiction subgroup meeting number 20, February 9th, 2017, at 1300 UTC. First, I'll begin by asking whether there is anyone on audio only. There doesn't appear to be anyone, and I'll ask if there are any updates to statements of interest. That appears to be none as well. So let's proceed into the agenda. First, the questionnaire, as you will have seen on our email list, has been translated into the ICANN languages, and as far as I can tell, it will be posted today and publicized, and we all should publicize it as well by passing on the announcement and whatever else we have to do to get it known. So I'd like to see if there are any questions about the questionnaire or comments about the questionnaire before we move on to the next item in the agenda. Seeing no questions, but before we move on to the next item, I will note that we will need to develop a method for dealing with the incoming responses, and we'll consult with staff and determine what the best method is for doing so. Caboose, I note in the chat you need to leave at the bottom of the hour, and noted for the record. Seeing no other comments on the questionnaire, we'll move on to the next item, which is the question for ICANN Legal. So if I could ask staff to put up the version in the screen, I think the redline marked up version. Probably so you can see the changes from what was previously done. So I just edited the question somewhat for form, if you will, not substance. And that's what's reflected here in the window here. And so I'd like to see if there are any comments or concerns about this question as it's drafted. If there aren't, it would be my intention to send this on to the co-chairs for the legal committee. I see a hand. Farminder, please go ahead.
Hello. Hello, Greg. Hello, everyone. Can you hear me, Greg?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, thank you. See, I did make an email comment, which I will repeat here. I would there are two things which I would like to touch on. One is that I think there are three kinds of litigations and impact of those litigations, which are different for an office of incorporation, and for places of physical presence, plus the places where there is not even any physical presence. And I wonder whether the question can be split in a manner which asks for separate advice or comment over these three kinds. Secondly, the question simply seems to ask whether a case can be maintained in these jurisdictions, which is important to know, but I think is a very limited inquiry, because in most cases nowadays, cases are maintainable in the sense that even if there is some impact of a particular operation in a country, generally the courts are able to take up a case. So while this is an important thing to answer, more important is to get an advice on if there is an adverse judgment against any policy or operational action, what kind of things I would necessarily have to do or not do? What are the options for ICANN? I think that is the important part, which also is different for different kinds. And to repeat, maintainability of cases nowadays for ICANN, which has some impact over every country, for me generally is yes for almost all jurisdictions. Thank you.
Thank you, Parminder. I'd like to see if you have a hand from Caboose. Please go ahead. Caboose, we don't hear you yet.
Yes, I'm waiting for your instruction to follow along. Yes, I have a question. I do not clearly understand the purpose of this listing and questions. Are we going by this to exclude any other things? Because the issue was quite clear. If the case is in Los Angeles, that is a court. If it's the case in Turkey, that is a court. So what is the purpose of this question? Are you have something in mind to restrict or to limit everything to these things, or there might be other cases that are not included here. So I am not sure the purpose of this. I don't know who have drafted this. I don't know who have initiated that, and I don't know the purpose of that. So I am not quite sure about the necessity of this, which would not have anything to what we knew before. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. The purpose of the question was to ascertain where ICANN could be sued and where that suit would not be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction over ICANN. We basically have four categories of jurisdictions, which I think if you put the four together, cover the entire world. So the first category are those where ICANN has hub offices or engagement offices, and we assume that ICANN is subject to suit, and that suit can be maintained in each of those places which are listed out individually. And then in question two, we list three different types of countries other than those. First, places where ICANN employees work from home but are essentially working remotely on a full-time or most of the time basis. So ICANN has, while no permanent office establishment, it does have essentially work being done there permanently. Then there are countries where ICANN has no ongoing physical presence but has had a formal meeting, so that it has been a major, although temporary, presence. Third, countries where ICANN meets none of the above criteria. So that would be everybody else or rest of the world of those that fall into the three categories above. So one of the questions that we do need the answer to, and Parmenter has proposed his view of what that answer may be, where I can be sued and not dismissed. Be dismissed for lack of essentially personal jurisdiction. And Parmenter has asked that we advance that to the impact of a judgment as well. So that's the point of the question. I don't know, Caboose, if that if you have anything further on that, please go ahead if you do.
Yes, but my question, perhaps I could explain it. Suppose that the ICANN rejects the contract with the registrar in a particular country in respect of particular GTLD under some particular instruction of a given government. That particular registrar should only take his course to California, or he could submit the complaint or the plenary, the difficulty to another court. So my question is that. You know that there are certain GTLDs that ICANN has rejected to have a contract with the registrar for those GTLDs under the instruction of particular government or for particular arrangements. So what that registrar should do? It should take the case to the court of California, or it could submit the case to another court. So that is the situation, and I don't know whether after the transition, whether that issue is still is valid, whether still ICANN could reject or prevent it getting into the contract with the registrar in relation with access to those two GTLDs, and where this case can be submitted. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I think that is a case or a situation that is not the subject of this question. This question is really only asking about ICANN's personal jurisdiction in the court, where ICANN has agreed to a choice of venue with a third part, with another party to contract. Typically that would be enforceable, and the parties have agreed that the case can be only brought in the venue where that is specified in the contract. For that party, it doesn't matter whether ICANN can be sued in Turkey. They've agreed to sue ICANN in California or in Geneva.
Okay, can you take the case that I mentioned in some subsequent meeting? Because that is an important issue. The question is whether that rule still exists after transition. If it still exists, what that registrar could do. Maybe it's not subject to this, but it is subject to jurisdiction. Is it possible that you can take that into account in your subsequent meetings? Thank you.
We can add that a question on that point of the validity of the choice of venue provision to confirm that it is still has to abide by the choice of law provision. I see a couple of comments in the question that this is covered in the question, and I'm just not sure exactly where it is covered exactly. In any case, I see a question from Jorge in the chat, which is, does ICANN in the question cover PTI? We can certainly we can certainly cover that, ask that question as well. PTI, my two cents, is that PTI is an independent, is an affiliated corporation with ICANN, but not a subsidiary. At that point, you're probably getting to a piercing the corporate veil question, which I think would fail. PTI does not have offices elsewhere, and therefore, I mean, we can also ask where PTI can be sued. I think that's a separate but related question, and we could ask that as well. Hopefully that responds to Jorge's question with regard to that. But, and again, we might as well ask ICANN Legal rather than just taking one person's off-the-cuff response. Paul McGrady.
Thanks. Paul McGrady here. So as I'm looking at this, I think it a couple of things. One, we may need to say countries or provinces slash states within countries rather than countries. I don't think that if I were ICANN Legal and I were asked that, you know, which countries are you subject to suit in, you know, you have a head office in California and one in Washington, D.C. Are you subject to suit in the United States? That's a very imprecise question because they may very well take the position that they're not subject to personal jurisdiction in Iowa, right? And so, you know, we may not get a the answer back that we are expecting because we asked a clumsy question. And so I think I would make that distinction. I would also offer to them the ability to make a distinction between general jurisdiction and specific jurisdiction, for example. You know, maybe they're subject to jurisdiction in Hyderabad for things that came out of that meeting, but they may very well take the position that having one meeting in Hyderabad doesn't submit them to general personal jurisdiction in India forever for everything, right? And so I think that we should offer them the ability to distinguish between general personal jurisdiction and specific jurisdiction. And again, even if they have an employee, they have an employee in Iowa, to take my prior example, they may take the position that they have, you know, they may be subject to a specific jurisdiction for a dispute with that employee, but not general jurisdiction, not having enough fingerprints in Iowa to be sued in Iowa for anything. Now, you know, people may disagree with that since, you know, they are engaged with contractual parties who have sold domain names to everybody pretty much everywhere. But I think that if I were ICANN Legal, I might, you know, want to build in some distinctions and not just sign onto a document that could get you sued anywhere. So for what that's worth, I think we should, you know, make these questions a bit more precise. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. I think that's a good point. And you may as well anticipate what ICANN Legal might come back to us with in terms of clarifying questions and try to be as clarifying as possible. Do we have a hand again from Parminder? Parminder, please go ahead.
Thank you, Greg. Two points. One is about Kavu's specific example of a possible case. And, Greg, I'm not sure that the way this question, as I read it, only refers to those cases which are sub voice of law or of private law, as I would say, because it simply says the accountability jurisdiction subgroup would like to understand in which jurisdictions ICANN may be subject to litigation as a defendant. That's all. It could be a defendant for contract law case. It could be a defendant for an aggrievement of a registrant who thinks he has had been wronged. It could be for a public law whereby somebody says there's an intellectual property violation or some other law. It just say wherever ICANN could be subject to litigation as a defendant and not just for private law. So I think cases like Kavu's presence are included or should be clearly included in this particular question. As I see it, they are included. Second, quickly, I agree with Paul that general jurisdictions and specific jurisdictions are different kind of issues. I think, therefore, we should present not by names of countries, but very clearly the extent of fingerprints, to quote Paul. In Office of Incorporation is one kind of presence. Other physical presence is a second kind of presence. And non-presence, whereby there could be other kinds of impact, is the third kind. And we should list out three kinds and ask the ICANN legal for their opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Parminder. I'm sorry. I still don't see where Kavus's question is answered here, because we're not asking just where they could be sued, but where the suit could be maintained. And the suit in, say, Turkey, where the choice of venue provision says that they can only be sued in California, would, unless the contract was dishonored, would be dismissed. So they could not maintain suit in that jurisdiction because of the choice of venue provision in the contract. David McCauley, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Excuse me. Thank you, Greg. David McCauley for the transcript. On the, I'd like to make 2 points. First of all, on the point that you were just speaking to and Parminder was speaking to about jurisdiction as a defendant, I agree with Parminder, and I think the question covers it. And I think in the example that you just used, Greg, if there was a suit brought in Turkey, but the venue, the contractual venue preference was for California, I think the suit that would be brought in Turkey would be a valid suit, and that the Turkish court could validly jurisdictionally address the question and make a decision based on venue that says this case needs to be transferred, dismissed and transferred to California, but it wouldn't be for lack of jurisdiction, at least not in my opinion. And I believe here is where I part ways with Parminder and Paul. I normally agree with what Paul says, but I disagree in this case. I think that we should not get specific, more granular. I'm sorry for this voice problem. We should not get more granular. I think that what it risks a diversion, and I sort of go back to first principles. I'm one who has frequently said we should really just focus on jurisdiction for dispute resolution and the hypotheticals. And I think this is illustrating one of the potential dangers of the hypotheticals, is it gets us wrapped around the axle in more and more granularity, and I just think that would be a mistake. I think the question is posed, if we do pursue this hypothetical, and as edited very well by you, Greg, I think it asks a legitimate question that a lawyer could answer, and I don't think we need to go farther. That's my view. Thanks very much.
Thank you, David. So I think, and thank you, I think, for bringing up, as I noted in the chat, the distinction between lack of personal jurisdiction and lack of venue, or not a proper forum due to the contract. So I agree that the suit could be maintained in terms of ICANN's personal jurisdiction, assuming that's what comes back, and that the court could then determine whether the contract was enforceable with regard to the venue provision, and then make that determination, which conceivably could be a yes or no. I'm not sure why they would decide no, but as long as the venue limitation in the contract was enforceable, the case would then be dismissed for lack of venue, but not for lack of personal jurisdiction. So it is, to my mind, it's a different question, and maybe it's a different, but rather than a different case, if you will, within these types of jurisdiction. Parminder, I'm not sure if that's an old hand. It does appear to raising all hands, so I'll ask Caboose to go ahead.
Yes, Greg, I'm sorry I have to leave, but my question is purely a jurisdiction question, and I don't think that it falls outside the mandate of the group. Whether it is in this question that you're having, that Paramount Services is there, I don't believe, I don't see it, or whether it's, but it is a jurisdiction, and I have to have some answer to that at a later stage. So I request you kindly to consider that and look at that one and take it up at the next meeting, any meeting that you have to think appropriately. That is something, a practical question that people are facing these days. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Caboose, we will take the question under advisement. And I'll circulate another draft of this answer that we can then we can take a look at. So I've noted several suggestions here and some concerns about the suggestion as well. So I'll try to turn something back to the list as quickly as possible, and we can resolve, make sure that we don't get wrapped around the axle. So that we don't get wrapped around the axle on this call, I'd like to move on to the next agenda item, which is hypothetical number one. Here we have the hypothetical, which we had some responses to on the list, although it sort of petered out after the first couple of responses. And this is a very key part of our work, and I'm hoping that everyone who has signed up to participate in this call, in this subgroup will participate in working on this hypothetical and responses to it. With the hypothetical in front of us, first I'd like to see if there are any comments. We may as well use the sub parts of this. So the first question is what is the influence of governing law and venue on the actual operation of policies? You see the straw man answers that I put in originally. And then one new bullet point, ICANN will have the right to appeal the case. And the appeals court may reverse a lower court decision. That's based on a decision on or a suggestion on the list from Phil Corwin, and then the remainder of that page and on to the next is from Parminder. Parminder has his hand up, so Parminder, please go ahead.
Thanks, Blake. The critical part of the hypothetical is a court finds ICANN's actions or inaction violating the law and issues an order requiring ICANN to change its actions. And then we have to kind of argue what happens. And here the hypothetical directly splits into three parts, because what ICANN will have to do is very different vis-a-vis whether it is issued by its jurisdiction of incorporation or the order is issued by jurisdiction where it has physical presence, or if it is issued by a jurisdiction where there is neither. So I think there is no point having answers which go back and forth between three very different sets of necessary action which ICANN would have to do following this kind of hypothetical. And therefore, I think we should split the answers into three streams and follow the requirements which ICANN will have to take up or do following this kind of an order? Or secondly, quickly, I think we need not go too much on, you know, the positive influence if you find for ICANN, because yes, those things are good, but we are looking at problem areas, and the problem area is an adverse action, and the problem area is worse when there is a jurisdiction of incorporation, and we need to focus on those things. If they don't exist, yes, good, but if they exist, then what should be done? Thank you.
Thank you, Parminder. I think you're assuming the answers to the question for ICANN Legal will come out in a particular way. I'm not sure I agree with that assumption or with the idea that you know, be limited jurisdiction, for instance, in a hub court, in a hub or an engagement country. But it is obviously a question we put forward to ICANN Legal. And would love to hear their answer. And so and we will obviously get that question out quickly. I'll turn to David McCauley.
Thanks, Greg. David McCauley again for the transcript. And I'm raising my hand just to add a comment, as you just requested. I have not been active on the list this past week, so I apologize for that. But I would just like to note my concurrence with the point you made last I think it was Tuesday or so, but and that is that the we may be missing an overarching presumption, I think was the word you used. I would use the word context. And I'm I guess restating my concern with the hypothetical. One of the concerns I have with the hypothetical is we're sort of peering into the future and guessing what might happen, trying to forecast. And I think that courts could conceivably go off the rails in the United States and any other country in the world. And I think it's just difficult to forecast. The one thing that the U.S. jurisdiction has going for it is 19 years of experience, which have been satisfactory, maybe not perfect, but it seems to me satisfactory. And so I wonder about delving further into hypotheticals and to your point about the overarching presumption, if that's the correct word, that might be missed. I hearken back to Annex 12 with its encouragement for us as Workstream 2 to work on jurisdiction for dispute resolution and recognize that we're Workstream 2. We're not a body that can create immunities. We're not a body that can create treaties. We have a limited role. There are appropriate questions for other forums. I just think our forum has a focus that we may be missing, and that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Before I turn to Paul McGrady, I would say that I hope that our review of ICANN's actual litigations, which is underway by a small group that could always use more people, will you know, reveal to us whether that has been satisfactory. As Aubrey noted, it's early to come to that conclusion, but I think that once we summarize the cases and see if there are any unsatisfactory or bizarre results, that you know, will and kind of answer that question. And we may also want to ask ICANN Legal, but not at this time, whether there are any cases they think that interfered with ICANN improperly. By and large, they seem to have a very good track record in court. One would say the answer is yes, that everything seems to be quite satisfactory. And I think we do need to work in the kind of the overarching presumption. And I think that even if our mandate is not as narrow as only looking at dispute resolution, the fact that we've been asked to focus on litigation, to my mind, indicates an overarching assumption that ICANN will be subject to litigation and subject to laws, broadly speaking, and not an immune from them, that is something that can be delved into further. But I think the idea that we would decide that ICANN can't be sued or can only be sued under very limited circumstances seems counterintuitive to me. But enough from me. I'll go to Paul McGrady.
Thanks, Paul McGrady, for the record. I won't be as eloquent as David was, and I will, because I think he sort of hit the umbrella issue here, I'll just address the last set of bullet points if I can. First of all, they presuppose something that may or may not be. They presuppose that ICANN is a global governance body, yet to see any treaty to that effect, yet to see any legislation from any country to that effect. ICANN is, like it or not, a California non-for-profit. And so I don't know what that means, and these bullet points presuppose that. And so I think that we need to unbake those kinds of presuppositions from these bullet points if they're going to be meaningful. And secondly, just to comment on these last few bullet points, which is they're wild. I'm not sure how else to describe them. You know, words like mockery, a huge presupposition that there is a clear dichotomy between U.S. country, the United States and its citizens versus non-U.S. countries and citizens in terms of legal and social norms, which, of course, is simply nonsense. So if we are going to go down this jurisdiction hypothetical number one path, and we want to include something along the lines of whatever this last set of bullet points was meant to do, we really need to take a red pen to it and try to figure out how to make it fit with the rest. If this were a multiple choice question, this would be, I would select this one because it's the one that doesn't fit with the others. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. And that's a good place for me to remark that this document is now a Google Doc. In addition, it's been distributed in Word form as well as PDF. So nobody owns a particular answer or bullet point. If they stay in this document, they need to be the consensus response of this subgroup. So, Paul, the red pen is in your hands. The Google Doc link is in your email box, and I encourage you and everybody to have at it. Both with regard to the bullet points that you were referring to and with regard to additions or changes to any of the other answers as well. Nothing would please me more than to see an active and multi-stakeholder work going forward on this hypothetical. So I look forward to seeing the results of your red pen, Paul. Phil, please go ahead.
Hey Greg, this is Paul. Just because I was called out in your response, you know, we all do try to get into as many Google Docs as possible, but with everything that's going on, there's hundreds and hundreds of Google Docs, and I'm not sure that I want to be part of the reauthoring of this particular bullet point because I'm not sure what it adds. Essentially, the bullet point itself presupposes that, ICANN is somehow above the courts and above the law, and I don't think I'm terribly interested in undermining the notion that the judicial branch of various governments may apply to ICANN. So I understand that, you know, the Google Docs belong to everybody, but the purpose of these phone calls, I think, is to express whether or not there's consensus that whoever is drafting what got it right or even close enough to be right. I don't think that the purpose of the cause is to remind us all that there are Google Docs. So I'm sympathetic, but at the same time, I'm not sure that I want my fingerprints on this particular bullet. I think courts matter. And in fact, in these days, I think they matter more than ever. Thank you.
Paul, thank you. Very good point. You know, the Google Doc remark was meant only as a footnote, although keep in mind that, you know, we do spend an hour on these calls and 167 hours not on these calls. So we do need to do work in the list and on the document, whether it's in comments or otherwise. But I think your overall point is very well taken, which is that we need to use these calls as best we can for dialogue regarding whether these are consensus or coming in from, you know, a singular view that is not held by more than one or a few members of the subgroup. I think that I'd be very interested to hear whether from others on whether this is a question that, or rather a response that should stay in or come out, be radically changed or turned on its head to endorse rather than dispute the idea of litigation in national courts, et cetera. We do need to get to the bottom of whether this is a valid way to look at this influence from the point of view of this subgroup as a whole. Clearly, it's a valid way in the view of at least one participant, but whether anybody else shares that view or shares your view is absolutely critical for us to determine. Right now, it's sitting there because a person has suggested it, and other than my one note on the side, I left it as is, because as rapporteur, I try not to take the first pen to everything, because I first I would need to some extent exercise judgment and viewpoint. I would rather other people do that first, but in the end, we'll need to exercise our collective judgment and viewpoint as to whether this answer makes sense, as well as any of the other ones. Sorry for being a bit long-winded. Paul probably said everything I just said and said it shorter and better. Phil Corwin, please go ahead.
Yes, Greg, thank you. Phil, for the record, without in any way having coordinated this with Paul, I want to comment on the same sections at the bottom of page one onto page two, and my view is that all of this should be struck for vastly overstating ICANN's role. ICANN is simply the technical coordinator of certain internet technical parameters, the policy areas regarding the internet that ICANN has no say about are much, much vaster than those in which ICANN has any direct control. But more than that, and aside from the a bunch of assertions that I believe don't stand up to scrutiny, as we've been discussing, ICANN can probably be sued not just in the U.S., but in any number of countries, and that suit be sustained. So we're not just talking about the potential impact of U.S. law, but of many other nations' laws on ICANN. And simply, these bullet points seem to assume that ICANN being susceptible to court jurisdiction and admonition and having to change its course when it's done something that's either in violation of its own bylaws and mission statement or otherwise unlawful, the thrust of this is that ICANN being subject to court jurisdiction and court orders is in violation of human rights. It's an attack on the entire structure of ICANN as a nonprofit private corporation rather than an intergovernmental organization, which was the central goal of the transition. And when you read to the end, it says, changing the policies or implementation of policy by ICANN as applied to the whole world on the basis of laws of one country, which could be, as we've discussed, any number of countries, depending on where the litigation is brought, violates the human right to democratic governance. This is all saying that ICANN being the court subject to court jurisdiction anywhere, and it's not just the U.S. ICANN could up and move to Switzerland tomorrow, and this these bullet points wouldn't leave any wouldn't read any differently because they're an attack upon ICANN being subject to judicial restraint. So my editing suggestion is strike it all. I think it makes vastly overstates ICANN's role and makes a number of assertions that are arguably incorrect, and its end point is that ICANN being subject to judicial sanction is a violation of human rights, which is a I don't think this working group should associate itself with such an assertion. Thank you. And I've probably stirred something up with those statements, but I'm not going to be silent when I see language that's just so over the top.
Thank you, Phil. No, you've done exactly what we need to do, which is to engage in vigorous discussion and debate. So have Phil and Paul, I think, both suggesting that this be struck essentially in its entirety. So I'll turn to Parminder.
Thank you, Greg. First of all, I would, for record, state that, yes, my entire engagement with ICANN and this group comes because I think ICANN is a global governance body. I think a lot of people here engage entirely out of that relationship or that status of ICANN. There are GAC members here, and they are not interested, I think, like I am not interested to be advising a U.S. nonprofit. That's none of our concern. If ICANN is a U.S. nonprofit, that's an anomaly, not its global governance status. Between the two, we should see what is the primary thing and what is a thing about which we may want to continue, not want to continue, but cannot be seen as the primary status of ICANN. To repeat, ICANN is a global governance body or a body with a global governance function, and that entirely underpins our engagement here as a global community on this issue. Secondly, I'd agree with Philip and perhaps another speaker that, yes, law is very important to apply on anything, and courts are the ones which can decide on the application of law. But I have been making a point repeatedly that the law should be democratic. Any law does not work. Colonial law does not work. U.S. would not want to live under Philippine law. So the law which is applied has to be democratically arrived at, and U.S. law is arrived at by the U.S. citizens' participation and not the rest of the world, and therefore is an anomaly to be put on a body with global governance function, and that's the whole logic and idea for me of the jurisdiction question. You can go beyond this and talk about what can be done or not be done, but this premise I would like to defend is important. And lastly, about your comment, Greg, that the hypothetical does not specify the jurisdiction which ICANN has been sued. So I did assume that we are talking about the major problem, which is if it is sued in U.S. jurisdiction, when thereby an ICANN will have to. It has no option other than to change its policy stances. It has options where it has physical presence by withdrawing that particular office and locating it in the neighboring country. It has options where it does not have physical presence. So it is not true to say that ICANN is equally or even close to equally liable to be sued in any country, which is what many people say here. It is not the fact. The fact is that only U.S. can force ICANN's hand, and that is a real problem. No other country can force ICANN's hand other than possibly having ICANN move out its outreach office, which they would gladly do, to the next country. So the facts are that the U.S. jurisdiction is the important one, and the problem is that U.S. jurisdiction laws are not globally democratic. So these are the points I thought I'd make in light of the discussion which got done just now. Thank you.
No, thank you, Parminder. I think you've stated a whole lot of assumptions and opinions as if they were facts. And unfortunately, we don't have more time on the call. First, I'm concerned that you're speaking for people on the call other than yourself, and I would like to see if there are any GAC members on this call who agree with Parminder's contention about their position. So if I could call out the GAC members on the call to put a check mark if they agree that GAC members have no interest in advising a U.S. nonprofit corporation. And I believe that was the contention about the GAC. So please do put up a green check if you agree with that statement.
Greg, could you repeat the question we're being asked to opine on?
We're asking GAC members only.
Okay.
Whether they have no interest in advising a U.S. nonprofit corporation. That was the Parminder, if you want to state the question yourself, that you did say that. You said that those exact words. Please, if you want to try to restate it, go ahead.
Greg, you are already anticipating that what I will do is try to restate what actually I have not said, but that's not a fact. I am an authority of what I said, and that's also in this the audio which I would like you to hear after we are done. My primary contention was that I can primarily body with a global governance function and only secondarily a U.S. nonprofit. Our association with this process comes from its role as global governance body, not as just an U.S. nonprofit. Because just as a U.N. nonprofit, we have no interest to be advising them. And I'm very sure, and this was about GAC, that GAC is present because we are dealing with a body with a global governance function and not just an U.S. nonprofit. Why would GAC constitute itself to advise a U.S. nonprofit? This can be checked as per your audio, and I object to the rapporteur making a very partisan point that this is not what I said and misrepresenting my point. Thank you, Greg.
We'll be off in 5 minutes. Thanks. I don't think that was a partisan point. I was trying to restate as best what you said. Now that you have restated it, I'll ask if there are any GAC members who wish to respond or who wish to agree with Parminder's characterization of their position as he just restated it. So if you have any remarks, please put up a hand. And if you agree, put up a green check. And if you don't support the statement, it would be good to see a red X as well, see whether this makes sense. If you could respond, that would be great. If there's a reason why you feel you can't respond, it'd be helpful to know as well. Finn says he did not hear the statement. I would suggest then that once we get the transcript back, that we'll put that on the list and ask for comment. Parminder, I don't believe I'm creating a controversy where one does not exist. You asserted that other people on this call had a particular view, and I wanted to ask them to speak for themselves with regard to that view. That's all I was trying to do. In any case, going back to the point itself, would like to see if there are other comments on this call on this last bullet point here under advancing the notion that ICANN should not be subject to the courts of any country or to the laws of any nation. Also, it would be helpful to know the basis of any of these statements here, as they are assertions. And without doing any research, I don't see any here that I understand the basis of, such as the assertion that there's a violation of human rights. Also, as far as I know, there is no law that has been decided democratically by the entire global population. So I think we're talking beyond hypotheticals to almost alternative universes. So in any case, any further comments on this would be most helpful so we can decide where one might go with this point. I see if Jorge has a more nuanced point, which is good to have. The key is whether accountability works and works equally for all, and jurisdictional aspects should not tip the scale unequally for the global community or for any particular part of that. Yes, Parmit, I know you cited a source, but again, the question is there a basis for that reading of those sources? That's the question. It's now 8:59, I would encourage everyone to comment in some fashion on this hypothetical, and not just on this bullet point. There's a lot more here, and this is, to my mind, an essential part of our working method, is to look at these hypotheticals and actual cases and to comment on the influences that are there. So if there are concerns about this as a working method, I understand the concern about hypotheticals, especially hypotheticals that I've, you know, vague in terms of the variables. But I do encourage folks to comment on that. And if your comments are in the Google Doc, that's great. And if they're not, if they're just an email with a statement of position, you know, I'll do my best as rapporteur to reflect those in the Google Doc. So we've now reached the top of the hour. So I will, unfortunately, have to adjourn this call and ask that we stop the recording, and I'll say goodbye to all until next time.
Thank you, Greg.